I'm Anna Sale, in for Leonard Lopate. You've probably seen or heard the ads for 23andMe, the at-home genetic testing company, which for about $100 and a little bit of spit promised to tell you all kinds of things about yourself, from your ancestry to your susceptibility to dozens of complex diseases. And although the company has attracted the ire of the FDA, it has already extracted and analyzed the DNA of 650,000 people, making it one of the largest genetic banks in the world. The company's founder, Ann Wojcicki, has big plans for all that genetic data, nothing short of, in her words, solving health. New York Magazine contributing editor Lisa Miller looked at the company and the implications of this quest to combine its customers' DNA with big data analytics. Miller's article is called "The Google of Spit." It appears in the April 21st issue of New York Magazine. And I'm pleased to welcome her back to the Leonard Lopate Show. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Good. You write that Ann Wojcicki, 23andMe's founder, wants to do with DNA what Google did for data. What does that mean exactly?
Well, it means that DNA is data, right? DNA is code. And so if you get enough people to contribute to a database, you can actually do things faster and with greater numbers of people than traditional science has ever been able to do. So the idea is you take a database and you slice and dice it so that you can compare population groups, you can compare people with similar genomes, that some which manifest disease, some which don't manifest disease. You can compare groups of genetic variations within disease groups. And you can do all of this just by posing algorithms to the database, and you can get answers within days, sometimes hours, that science used to take years to do.
So the idea is if you get enough data, you can get a lot of answers. How does she go from there to saying she's going to solve health?
Right. So from the research, from the science, from the speeded up and more efficient scientific research, you can direct R&D. You can direct pharmaceutical research. You can direct. You can get new surgical treatments. You can develop new kinds of prescription eyeglasses. You can get new sunscreens. Like, the science is the first step, and then the developing products, the R&D, is the second step. And then there's this third step where if they know who you are and they know your genome, they can market the stuff that they develop back to you. And you may actually really need it. So it's like Amazon for health, or a slightly more complicated analogy is a Facebook for health. It's a big data engine that knows a lot about you. It solves science problems, and with those solutions, those solutions can be marketed back to you.
So the marketing pitch is, give us some spit and we'll tell you what your genetic code says about you. How did they communicate that this was going to become this enormous bank that algorithms were going to be continuing to investigate?
Well, the company has always had a twofold mission. One is to build the biggest genetic database in the world, and the other is to democratize genomics. So, we will tell you about your DNA for the low price of $99. And when you spit, when you give them your saliva and send it into the lab, you have to agree or not to be part of their database. So it's an explicit agreement. And I think they say that 90% of the people who spit do enter the database, the research database. That's how they collect it. It's a twofold mission, and one mission, enables the other.
Tell me a little bit about Ann Wojcicki. You spent a lot of time with her. She was married to Google founder Sergey Brin. They're now separated. How did she first get interested in genetic testing?
She was a healthcare analyst. She worked on Wall Street, and she was very frustrated with the way that healthcare was run as a business. She was raised in Stanford, at Stanford University. Her father was a physics professor. She saw the value of, quantification as a kid. And then she, lived in Silicon Valley and was part of the Google inner circle from the very beginning. So she was able to see, what big data could do, sort of to make things more efficient, more optimized. These are Silicon Valley words, optimize, big data gets you more answers more quickly. That's what Google does, right? There she was working on Wall Street, living on the East Coast, investing in health companies, and feeling like none of these companies had optimization as their primary goal. They were slow to move. They were inefficient. They focused on, clinical trials, which were slow moving. And just at around this time, the human genome was sequenced. It was sequenced by this Human Genome Project in 2003, after a decade of research and billions of dollars. And a lot of people started saying, look, we can apply big data methods to the genome and get all of these answers really, really, really quickly. So she comes out of a Silicon Valley context. She was looking at healthcare as a business. At the same time, the genome was being sequenced, and she saw big potential there.
How did Parkinson's play in and the susceptibility of her children?
Right. So Sergey Brin's mother, Zhenya, was born in Russia and grew up in Moscow, and she had an aunt whom she loved who came down with Parkinson's disease quite young, at 50. And Zhenya herself moved to America and then also came down with Parkinson's at 50. And she suspected that her Parkinson's was hereditary. Parkinson's is mostly not hereditary, but she suspected that her version was. And the family held that suspicion, including Anne, the daughter-in-law. And so Anne was always pushing Sergey to sort of explore Parkinson's more, explore the hereditary aspect of Parkinson's more. When big data methods were starting to be used to explore the genome, she was really encouraging Sergey to sort of look seriously at that. And when she started her company, 23andMe, Zhenya, her mother-in-law, spit, and they found two copies of a mutant gene that predisposes for Parkinson's. And when they looked at Sergey's genes, he has one copy. So that means that their children, they have two young children, may have the Parkinson's gene. They won't say whether the kids have it, but it makes Anne's determination discover the genetic underpinnings of disease very fierce indeed, and very personal.
Very personal, and you mentioned speed before, and then the FDA gets involved.
Right.
What kinds of diseases could 23andMe test consumers for before the FDA got involved?
Well, the 23andMe test tests for, I think, 122 diseases. And so when you get your health risk report, it says, you have a higher or lower than average risk for almost any disease you can think of, heart disease, psoriasis, gout, Alzheimer's, type 1 diabetes, Parkinson's disease, the breast cancer gene, name a disease. And 23andMe probably has it on their chip. When the FDA intervened in November, and they said, 23andMe is selling a medical device, a medical test, directly to consumers without the intervention of any doctor, without prescription, and without our approval. So stop offering consumers these health results. And so they did. And right now, for $99, what you get is a lot of ancestry information, but no health results at all.
You were able, however, to take the test
and
get back some results.
Yes. The publicist for 23andMe had basically a backdated pile of kits. So kits with barcodes that were before the November 22nd FDA warning. And so I got one of those kits and spit into it. And so, I got all of this information that 23andMe is not, in other circumstances supposed to be giving out. And it is interesting information, although, in the end, it's hard to know what to make of it. It told me I'm very fit. It told me that I have a high risk of heart disease. I sort of didn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I'm extremely fit, and doctors are always complimenting me on my heart and my low blood pressure, my slow pulse. It also said that I had likely brown eyes, and my eyes are blue. So that raises a red flag for me. It said that I had a higher than average chance of getting psoriasis and a lower average chance of getting gout and a higher than average chance of getting colon cancer, which is, based on my family history, accurate. My mother died of colon cancer. So there's a lot of information. I didn't get they do give you results to some of the very significantly penetrative genes, like the BRCA gene, like the cystic fibrosis gene, genes where you know that if you have it, you have a pretty good chance of getting this disease. And there's a wall behind those results, and they say, these are potentially scary results. Click yes if you want to see them. In my case, luckily, I didn't have those results. I didn't have a proclivity for those diseases, so I don't know what it would feel like if you did.
So there's no counseling, but there is a warning
there's
before
a warning.
You click.
Right, there's a shield. It says, you know, this is behind a wall. Know that these are, you know, potentially that these results could rock your world. Click yes if you want to see them.
How does Ann Wojcicki talk about, she's gathering this data. There's a lot of variables in how that data might be expressed. How does she talk about the limitations of the data that she's collected?
It's so interesting. You know, it strikes me as a really Silicon Valley-ish mindset, which is, the more data you have, the better your results are. The faster you can make, you know, you can come to answers. We know this is true from Google, right? The more we know about you, the more we can give you what you want and need. And we aren't going to get hung up on rigid views of what's right, because data is like a big data bank is like a big, huge organism that gets better and better and better and more and more and more refined the more data you put into it, and the better your algorithms are.
And you note that they're not just planning on looking at genetic info, but cross-referencing other data that's available.
That's right.
Online dating, where you live, what kind of lifestyle you have.
That's right. And so, you know, from her perspective, good ballpark results are better than no information, and the good ballpark results will get better and better and better the more people participate in the database. From a traditional science perspective, and I'm putting words in their mouth, but from the FDA perspective, you know, good ballpark results aren't enough for a person who's getting a health report at home late at night to take to the bank, right? You can't take an action based on good ballpark results. You can't change your life based on good ballpark results. You don't know if you're going to live or die based on good ballpark results, right? I mean, based on my genotype, I have brown eyes, except the fact is my eyes are blue. So the good ballpark results don't see my eye color. And that seems like a really good key to what's wrong with the test, right? A good ballpark result can be pretty far off.
Can be wrong. Lisa Miller wrote The Google of Spit. It's about the company 23andMe. The article is in the latest issue of New York Magazine. And Lisa, you mentioned since November, the FDA has blocked 23andMe from giving health information directly to consumers. What's the plan for making money for 23andMe?
Well, the database is the profit center, right? So they're selling the kits for $99. But where they really have value is in the database, and they can lease it to scientific researchers who are exploring questions and need large study groups. They can lease it to pharmaceutical companies who are looking at disease groups to make drugs. They can give it away. That doesn't make them any money. They can potentially lease it to marketers of products who want to, you know, sell stuff to a certain category of people with a certain disease risk. So the better their data, the broader, the deeper it is, the more they have to sell or lease to interested parties. And this is not, I mean, it's a very, very useful tool to people who are doing cancer drug research or Parkinson's research or Alzheimer's research, you know, to find large groups of people who have the disease and about whom their genetic information is known.
You note one misstep 23andMe made is when they applied for a patent.
Yeah. Yeah. They announced this. They did because Parkinson's is of such concern to Anne and to Sergey, they announced a relationship with the Michael J. Fox Foundation where they were going to build the biggest database of Parkinson's patients in the world. And they actually did that. They got 10,000 people with Parkinson's to submit their database. To submit their DNA to the database, and then they started, you know, applying algorithms to those data. You know, what can we find out about these people? And they were looking especially at groups of people who had the genetic variant that Sergey has, which is called a variant in a gene called LRRK2. And what they found was that a small number of people who had LRRK2 also had another genetic factor called SGK1, which appeared to protect against LRRK2. So, oh my God, if you have SGK1 and you have LRRK2, you may not have Parkinson's. This is a huge, potentially huge discovery because you can make drugs that look like, feel like SGK1, and then you might not get Parkinson's. So they announced this, you know, patent that they'd applied for actually years earlier that locked up all of their discoveries, all of their gene discoveries around Parkinson's. And people got really mad because their whole marketing play was this democratizing of genomics, like give the data to the people. Don't make the data part of the medical establishment. It's your data. You should have it. And a patent reflects exactly the opposite, which is, you know, we're going to lock up this data, and we're going to sell it, or we're going to lease it, and it's ours, and it's not yours, and now you have to pay to use it. And a lot of people who were really into the sort of democratization of genomics promise of the company were really incensed that that Anne would patent her discoveries in that way. But she said to me, you know, look, we need this to work as a business, and the only way it will work as a business is if we own the data and can lease it at will. If we want to give it away, that's fine. We can give it away later, but at least we've got it locked up by a patent.
So for now, they are selling the privilege of having their data collected to consumers. Lisa Miller writes about that in The Google of Spit, the company 23andMe. The article appears in the most recent issue of New York Magazine. Lisa is also the author of Visions of Heaven, A Journey Through the Afterlife. Lisa, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
So happy to be here. Thanks.